Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tedam srijate vishvam.
Tedam srijate vishvam.
Durvibhavyam adhishvarai.
Durvibhavyam adhishvarai.
Bhuya eva vivitsami.
Bhuya eva vivitsami.
Bhagavan atma mayaya.
Bhagavan atma mayaya.
Yatedam srijate vishvam.
Tedam srijate vishvam.
Durvibhavyam adhishvarai. Translation. I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the great demigods. Purport. In every inquisitive mind, the important question of the creation of the phenomenal world arises, and therefore for a personality like Maharaj Parikshit, who was to know all the activities of the Lord from his spiritual master, such an inquiry is not uncommon. For every unknown thing, we have to learn and inquire from a learned personality. The question of creation is also one of such inquiries to be made to the right person. The spiritual master, therefore, must be one who is sarvagya, as stated herein before in connection with Shukadev Goswami. Thus, all inquiries on God which are unknown to the disciple may be made from the qualified spiritual master, and here the practical example is set by Maharaj Parikshit. It was, however, already known to Maharaj Parikshit that everything we see is born out of the energy of the Lord, as we have all learned in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yataha. So Maharaj Parikshit wanted to know the process of creation. The origin of creation was known to him, otherwise he would not have inquired how the personality of Godhead, by his different energies, creates this phenomenal world. The common man also knows that the creation is made by some creator and is not created automatically. We have no experience in the practical world that a thing is created automatically. Foolish people say that the creative energy is independent and acts automatically as electrical energy works. But the intelligent man knows that even the electrical energy is generated by an expert engineer in the localized powerhouse, and thus the energy is distributed everywhere under the resident engineer's supervision. The Lord's supervision in connection with creation is mentioned even in the Bhagavad Gita, and it is clearly said there that material energy is a manifestation of one of many such energies of the Supreme. Parasya Shaktiya Vividhaiva Shruyate. An inexperienced boy may be struck with wonder by seeing the impersonal actions of electronics or many other wonderful things conducted by electrical energy. But an experienced man knows that behind the action is a living man who creates such energy. Similarly, the so-called scholars and philosophers of the world may, by mental speculation, present so many utopian theories about the impersonal creation of the universe. But an intelligent devotee of the Lord, by studying the Bhagavad Gita, can know that behind the creation is the hand of the Supreme Lord, just as in the generating electrical powerhouse there is the resident engineer. The research scholar finds out the cause and the effect of everything, but research scholars as great as Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and many other demigods are sometimes bewildered by seeing the wonderful creative energy of the Lord. So what to speak of the tiny mundane scholars dealing in petty things? As there are differences in the living conditions of different planets of the universe, and as one planet is superior to others, the brains of the living entities in those respective planets are also of different categorical values. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, one can compare the long duration of life of the inhabitants of Brahma's planet, which is inconceivable to the inhabitants of this planet Earth, to the categorical value of the brain of Brahmaji, also inconceivable to any great scientist of this planet. And with such high brain power, even Brahmaji has described in his great Sanghita, Brahma Sanghita, as follows. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satyadananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagavan, but Krishna is the supreme because none can excel him. He is the supreme person and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He He is the primeval Lord Govinda and the cause of all causes. Ramaji admits Lord Krishna to be the supreme cause of all causes. But persons with tiny brains within this petty planet Earth think of the Lord as one of them. Thus, when the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita that He, Lord Krishna, is all in all, the speculative philosophers and the mundane wranglers deride Him, and the Lord regretfully says, Avajananti mangurha manushin tanumash ashritam parang bhava majananto mamabhuta maheshvaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Brahma and Shiva, and what to speak of other demigods, are bhutas, or powerful created demigods who manage universal affairs, much like ministers appointed by a king. The ministers may be Ishvaras or controllers, but the Supreme Lord is Maheshvara, or the creator of the controllers. Persons with a profound of knowledge do not know this, and therefore they have the audacity to deride Him, because He comes before us by His causeless mercy, occasionally as a human being. The Lord is not like a human being. He is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, or the absolute personality of Godhead, and there is no difference between His body and His soul. He is both the power and the powerful. Maharaj Parikshit did not ask his spiritual master Shukadev Goswami to narrate Lord Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He wanted to hear first about the creation of the Lord. Shukadev Goswami did not say that the king should hear about the direct transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The time was very short, and naturally Shukadev Goswami could have gone directly to the 10th canto to make a short cut of the whole thing, as generally done by the professional reciters. But neither the king nor the great speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam jumped up like the organizers of Bhagavatam. Both of them proceeded systematically, so that both future readers and hearers might take lessons from the example of the procedure of reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are in control of the external energy of the Lord, or in other words, those who are in the material world, must first of all know how the external energy of the Lord is working under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and afterwards one may try to enter into the activities of His internal energy. The mundaners are mostly worshippers of Durga Devi, the external energy of Krishna, but they do not know that Durga Devi is but the shadow energy of the Lord. Behind her astonishing display of material workings is the direction of the Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Brahma Sanhita affirms that Durga Shakti is working by the direction of Govinda, and without His sanction, the powerful Durga Shakti cannot move even a blade of grass. Therefore, the neophyte devotee, instead of jumping at once to the platform of transcendental pastimes presented by the internal energy of the Lord, may know how great the Supreme Lord is by inquiring about the process of His creative energy. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, descriptions of the creative energy and the Lord's hand in it are explained, and the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita has warned the neophyte devotees to be seriously on guard against the pitfall of neglecting knowledge about Krishna in regard to how great He is. Only when one knows Lord Krishna's greatness can one firmly put one's unflinching faith in Him. Otherwise, like the common man, even the great leaders of men will mistake Lord Krishna for one of the many demigods, or a historical personality, or a myth only. The transcendental pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan, or even at Dwarka, are relishable for persons who have already qualified themselves in advanced spiritual techniques, and the common man may be able to attain such a plane by the gradual process of service and inquiries, as we shall see in the behavior of Maharaj Parikshit. Prabhupada, in very simple and straightforward language, is here demolishing the stupid ideas of the so-called scientists, or impersonal philosophers, personalistic philosophers. In the preface to the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada states that by studying this Bhagavatam as he, Prabhupada, has presented it, one can be defended from the onslaughts of atheists. In the modern society, it's very popular among a certain class of people to psychoanalyze others. What is going on in their consciousness? Oh, what is going on is they're being onslaughted or slaughtered by atheistic ideas. At every moment, there is tremendous atheistic propaganda distorting the consciousness of every person in the modern age. The whole educational system, the whole ethos, every magazine, every newspaper, everything on TV is all making propaganda that asatyama pratishtam te jagadahuranishwaram, that there's no God in control, there's no absolute truth. If you want, you can believe in God. That's also okay. We can allow that. Not very serious. Yeah. We can allow a small number of people to seriously believe in God just to show how liberal we are. But actually, there's no substantive principle in existence. And scientists have proved it. How they've proved it or what they've proved, we're not exactly sure, because our consciousness is sunk in a big bog or morass of foolish sense gratificatory ideas. This material world anyway is illusory by its nature. At least it's illusory for those who accept it as such, which means everyone here. But in the modern age, they have created all kinds of phantasmagorias to increase the illusion or to increase the distance away from the distance of the people of the modern age from any concept of actual reality, with movies and novels and sports and fashions and all kinds of diversions away from the really important questions of life. So the whole ethos of society is an onslaught against the pure consciousness of the living being. The underlying so-called philosophical principle of which is that actually there's no God in control. There's no God, there's no substantive principle of reality, there's no right, there's no wrong. Right or wrong is calculated in terms of how we should not disturb others in their quest for sense gratification. So aborting babies, they're not actually babies, but aborting its within the womb, that's also good, avoiding objects within the womb. Because if that object turned into a baby, then no one would look after it properly anyway. So let's be kind to it and kill it now. So all this spurious morality and muddled thinking, which goes on in the modern age as high intellectualism, is demolished by reading one page of Prabhupada's books. Just like Prabhupada points out here, something is actually very simple, but because our brains are so muddled, we can't understand it at all. Prabhupada gives very simple examples to explain the Vedic version. Prabhupada has quoted the Vedic version. Parasya shaktiya vividhaiva shuryate. The Lord's energies are known and heard about in different ways. The Lord has many energies. Para, he who is superior is the possessor of energies. Prabhupada gives the example that electrical energy, it does not work automatically. It may appear to. If you hit the switch, the light comes on. And we are told that this is due to electrical energy. So it appears to be automatic. But actually, there's an arrangement behind all this. Ultimately, there is a powerhouse, which is overseen by an intelligent person. And it is a basic principle that behind energy there is an energetic, intelligent controller. Now the atheists may argue, well, we've seen the electrical engineer, but we never saw any God. Therefore, we cannot necessarily conclude that there is a God. It is a foolish argument. The basic principle is there that if there's energy that works it's seen to work in a formulated manner, then there should be understood that there is an intelligent controller behind that. But people say, well, we can't see it, therefore we don't believe in it. Again, it is foolishness. We don't see how our food's digested, but it's digested. So just that we can't, you may say that, well, scientists have studied in this way and that way, and they can tell you how it's digested. You may say, well, in my particular case, they don't know exactly, so let me cut open my stomach and see what's going on. Some basic modicum of common sense is required. And as the word is used here, durvibhavyam, this common sense should extend to that, to understand that there are many things which are not possible for us to understand anyway. This word durvibhavyam means inconceivable. Parikshit Maharaj is asking Shukadeva Goswami to explain to him how the Lord creates the universes. At the same time, as he's asking him to explain, he's understanding that it's inconceivable. So it appears to be contradictory. How can we understand something which is inconceivable? The beginning of understanding transcendental knowledge is to accept that ultimately we can't understand everything. Jiva Goswami states that, Prabhupada quotes Jiva Goswami as saying that Jiva Goswami states that the beginning of understanding God is to accept his achintya shakti. Achintya shakti means inconceivable energies. So the beginning of understanding God is to understand that he's not ultimately understandable. If he was fully understandable, then he wouldn't be God. If we, tiny little beings, could understand everything about him, then how is he the unlimited Supreme Lord? So Prabhupada explained that when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that you should, devotees, they understand me, or you should try to understand me, that means as far as we can do with our tiny limited intelligence. There are certain principles that we should understand. Exactly how Krishna does everything, that may not be possible for us to understand. Right. But that he does do everything, that we should accept.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if we don't accept the principle of a supreme controller, then we're left in the left simply to speculate from a tiny position. Well, the attempt of mundane scholars to try and to explain reality, it's almost laughable. We're sitting on a tiny, tiny, tiny little planet in a tiny corner of some little universe somewhere and talking about how, trying to understand how everything is going on and giving big theories. It's like an ant is crawling around and he's trying to understand everything. He can't even understand that why this room is here or what it is, what a room is or why we're all sitting here. But so the beginning of understanding is the humility of understanding how small we are, and that anyway it's not possible for us to understand everything. But the basic principle that there is a supreme controller, that we can accept even with logic. But exactly who that supreme controller is, how he controls everything, that is not possible to understand by logic. Just like if you come to some country, you can understand that there must be some supreme administrator within the country. There must be some prime minister or president or whatever. So that can be understood by inference. But who that person is, what his name is, what he likes to eat for breakfast, that you can't find out by logic. What his system for administrating his country is, cannot find out by logic. That you have to find out by asking someone who knows. So in the same way, it's very logical to understand that there is a supreme controller, but that we can only find out about him from someone who knows. What he eats for breakfast, you can never find out by speculating in millions of years. You may think, well, it's not very important to know what the prime minister eats for breakfast. In the case of Krishna, it is important because he's not an impersonal, distant controller. Ultimately, this knowledge of how the Supreme Lord controls everything, this leads us up to understanding Krishna as a person. He's not simply some distant controller pulling some strings and throwing some people into hell. Ultimately, this understanding of Krishna in his greatness leads us to understand him in his sweetness. He is not simply a cosmic manipulator, but his sweetness, his pastimes, that is to be described, his pastimes, his loving pastimes with his devotees, that is to be described later in the Bhagavatam. And Shukadeva Goswami will explain to Parikshit Maharaj that understanding of the Supreme Lord or understanding of reality ultimately means to understand and enter into a very sweet, loving relationship with this Supreme Lord. And it is important to know what he eats for breakfast because the devotee has to feed him breakfast. But first, before he can approach that closely, he has to understand how to approach that Supreme Person. If he takes this Supreme Person who acts in a very loving relationship with his devotees, if he takes him as some kind of ordinary person, then he's going to approach the Lord in the wrong way. Krishna, when he appears in this world among his devotees, in many ways acts as if an ordinary person. He, as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, he has his friends, he has his girlfriends. In many ways, he appears like an ordinary person. And the devotees who live with him in Vrindavan or Mathura or Dwaraka, they relate to him to a large extent like that. But even though that is the goal of devotees, to come to the platform of serving Krishna very intimately, because we are now in the absolutely opposite platform, Viparya Smritihi, opposite way of thinking, then we have to be gradually trained to understand how to approach Krishna properly. So the first point is to understand that actually there is a Supreme Lord and Supreme Controller. Some people are so far away from God consciousness that they don't even accept that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are people who have no interest in any metaphysical question, no interest whatsoever. And there are others who are superficially interested, but they make an impersonal conclusion. Then there are others who accept that there is a God, but they have very little knowledge of him. And therefore, they make so many mistakes in understanding him. That is why Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring from Shukadev Goswami, how we can understand how the Supreme Lord creates all these universes. He wants systematic knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, if we have only very slight or superficial knowledge, then so many mistakes will come. Just like we find in the superficially theistic religions of the world, that they mix belief in God with activities which are most ungodly. Even though they accept that there is a Supreme Lord, they indulge in meat-eating in the name of God. And they can't progress beyond that platform of simply having a superficial belief in God, because they perform activities which are actually not at all pleasing to Him. So here Parikshit Maharaj is asking for knowledge of God, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanams, scientific, systematic knowledge of the Supreme Lord, Mukta Sangasya Jayate, by which one can be freed from all materialistic conceptions of life. So first, the understanding has to be there of the greatness of the Supreme Lord, how He is interacting with this material cosmos. Actually, how He's relating with this material cosmos, it's not His greatest glory. Often people, they say, who is God? He is the Creator. Because they know nothing beyond this material world, they think that God created this material world as His greatest glory. But actually, the Supreme Lord, He is known as Vaikunthanath. He is the Lord of the spiritual world. He is also known as Srishtikarta, the one who created this material world. But that's not a much used name. That is a function He creates out of His kindness for those souls who have turned away from Him. But His own constitutional position is as the Lord of the spiritual world. But because we are in this material world and we consider this to be our reality, then first of all, we are enjoined to understand God in relationship to the situation we are presently in. And then gradually we can be brought to understand the more important knowledge of how He is the Lord of the spiritual world. This is just like there's one Lokik Nyai, or common example, this Arundhati Darshan Nyai, how to see the star called Arundhati. Actually, if you want to see Arundhati, the star, she's next to her husband, Vashishta. At the time of marriage, the young girls are shown, you should see Arundhati. You should take her blessings and be like her, good wife. So actually, Arundhati is a very small star, not easily seen. So first you have to point out, this is Vashishta. This is a very big, bright, shining star. So do you see that big shining star? Okay, just look to the side. Can you see a tiny little shining one? That is Arundhati. Okay. So in the same way, the subject matter that we are to understand is Krishna, the Supreme Lord, the Lord of the spiritual world. But first we are shown that which we can easily see, how the Supreme Lord relates to this material world. Then when we've focused on that, then we can be taken to the next point, which is to understand the Supreme Lord in His own position as the Lord of the spiritual world. And then gradually we can even go beyond the Vaikuntha conception of the Lord. That just like a king, when he's in his court, he may be very formal. He may laugh and joke also, but there's a certain formality, isn't there? He's laughing and joking may be there, but not too much, because we're in the presence of the king. But then when he goes in the inner apartments with his wives and children, and there, all formality is gone. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord, in His majestic aspect, is there in Vaikuntha. And in His informal aspect, is there as He is Krishna, who is Vrindavana Natabara, the dancer, best dancer of Vrindavan. In the court, the king doesn't dance. Dancers come and dance and he watches. Or even if there's some dancing, it will be very grave. There will be a grave style. But in Vrindavan, gravity is dispensed with. So that is the ultimate subject of this Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna in Vrindavan. The 10th canto of Bhagavatam is just like the smiling face of the Lord. We are enjoined to hear the first two cantos of the Bhagavatam first, and then gradually go up into the other cantos. So looking at the feet, that means there is formal outlook. When one feels great respect towards a person, then he will concentrate on the feet only. They won't want to look in the face. Only when one is in a very intimate relationship can one look in the face of someone else and smile face to face. These kind of things aren't known in the West very much. And in the West, it's democracy. Everyone's all the same. But in Vedic culture, there's gradation within society. It's not that you just walk up to anybody and say anything you like. So especially with God, we can imagine that if we're to deal with Him, then how low a position we have to take. There's no question of democracy in dealing with Krishna. He is the supreme autocrat, overlord. But by His own wish, in His Vrindavan pastimes, He becomes as if subordinate to His devotees. Now, as Prabhupada points out here in his purport, this is not something to be jumped into. First, one has to understand, not only understand, but fully integrate chitaiti kariya aikya, completely make part of one's consciousness, that I am the servant of Krishna. He is the enjoyer, I am the enjoyed. Because in this material world, we may also have different informal dealings, but they're all based on each individual trying to exploit the others for their own sense gratification. For one, if there's any trace of desire for personal sense gratification, then if one tries to enter into the intimate pastimes of Krishna, then instead of thinking how to serve Krishna, you'll try to exploit Krishna. How I can enjoy this situation. And we see that even Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, that many people, devotees of some sort, they like to hear about it, but they're thinking, how I am enjoying this. So even though Shukadeva Goswami didn't have much time to speak the whole Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, still Parikshit Maharaj himself asked Shukadeva Goswami to first systematically go through the understanding of how Krishna is the supreme great. If he had not done so, then definitely what we have in the modern age, so many cheap devotees, they would have, who deliberately misunderstand what we have even now, they would have taken advantage of that to become even more degraded. So as we live in this atheistic civilization, which at every moment, at every word, at every step, pounds into us, you are the enjoyer, you should enjoy. We should take information from the spiritual world. You are not the enjoyer. You are to be enjoyed by Krishna. We have to regularly take these messages from the spiritual world, regularly study Prabhupada's books, in which in every line, in every word, in every syllable, and even in the white space between the letters, Prabhupada is again and again telling, you are not the enjoyer, you are the servant of Krishna. This will protect us from the onslaught of atheists. To understand this very simple principle, there is the Supreme Lord. This world is not meaningless. We are all spirit soul, we are not the body, we are all servants of Krishna. And reality doesn't mean just what we see or what we imbibe from TV, newspapers, other people and so on. But reality means to understand Krishna. Reality is presented in Shastra through the Guru Parampara. And if we daily take in this knowledge, then our consciousness will always remain clear. Otherwise, we'll be destroyed by the onslaughts of atheists. Yeah. So the point here is straightforward. Let's state it again and again and again. It's always purifying to hear it, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all His servants, and our only duty is to serve Krishna. This is for our own ultimate benefit, so we should do it. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So what are we doing? Questions now or later or what? Questions, answers, comments? Anyway, we have so many classes.
Is there some purpose in descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam that already in the first canto there is Queen Kunti and her prayers where she reveals her pure devotion, and only later on there are persons like Dhruva Maharaj or Gajendra who didn't have so pure motivation as she had. What is the purpose?
Well, the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam from beginning to end is to describe the glories of Krishna. It may not be exactly, how would you say, methodological in the sense of going from one stage to the next. That's given in, like that is given in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where it takes us step by step. Actually, Shukadeva Goswami begins speaking just now in the second canto. And this his presentation begins just like this with the process of creation. And then he gradually goes up and describes. And he describes in the subject matters of Bhagavatam. Actually, how the different Krishna and Rama and all, how they are described, all their pastimes. That comes in the description of the different families of Kshatriyas. Whereas the first canto of Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada explained, it's like an appendage to the subject matter of the Mahabharata. Although it's presented in a different perspective, it's a more directly devotional perspective. But it's true that without the pure devotional understanding, that who will understand Kunti's prayers? They're to be understood from the platform of pure devotion.
I have one question regarding your criticism of the society. I couldn't follow one aspect. This is you criticize sports. I don't know what you mean by that.
Put the question in check. Well, I stated that how modern society has created a phantasmagoria in which people's consciousness is absorbed in fashion, TV, films, sports, and so on. And people take it very seriously. What is the result of some football match or cricket match or whatever? In India, it's all cricket. You don't even know. You never heard of that. You didn't get your consciousness spoiled by that. So people put a lot of, they put so much importance on how the ball goes this way or that way. Or if the ball goes into the net in a football game, and it's what they, actually it's not the this team's net or the other team's net, but they've ascribed, this is this team's goal. So if the ball goes in that net, one set of people feel very happy and the other set of people feel very unhappy. But whether the ball is in the net or outside the net or whether it's punctured or whatever is not actually very important. But okay, because we ascribed importance to it, therefore we take it very seriously. But it's meaningless. Actually, it's meaningless. It doesn't really matter whether the ball goes this way or that way, but only because we ascribed that this is a game and these are the rules, and if this person should kick it this way, then he's a great hero and so on. But actually, it has no meaning. So it is, it's illusion piled on top of illusion. Already we're in illusion in this material world, and we created sports and fashion and movies, and people discuss, so what is the theme of this movie, and what do you think about this character? And the character is just a completely made-up character, but they discuss about, you see, his emotions and his feelings and what he should have done, and all, it's just completely nonsense. So in this way, it takes our consciousness further away from Krishna. Asatyare satya karimani. We take that which is unreal to be real. We take it to be very important, whether our football team wins or loses. Actually, there's no winning or losing. It's just, you know, it's a bunch of people running around with a ball. But they've made these rules that if you do this, if you put the ball in that net more times than the other, then you win. And so it's mass hysteria of foolishness. Huge business. Millions of dollars. Some person, because he's very expert in kicking a ball, he can earn millions of dollars.
Then there is a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, whoever tasted once a honey from the lotus feet of Krishna, he will never forget the taste and to remain in his mouth. And so why to worry so much about the onslaught of the atheists? Krishna has given them this age, so they are attacking, but we should just tolerate it, and why to be so worried about it?
Well, one thing is, we may not have got the full taste. We're still chewing tobacco on the other side of our mouth. The other thing is that we may temporarily lose that taste. So, of course, if you want to be slaughtered by the atheists, I mean, it's up to you.
As the Prabhupada said, we make spiritual advancement by kicking the atheists in the face.
Yes. The more we do so, the more we make advancement. That's in Life Comes From Life, right? Did they put that in, or did they?
That's why they're there.
Yeah, so attack is the best means of defense. Yes, that's true. We shouldn't just simply sit in our apartment and read Srimad Bhagavatam. We should also go out and distribute. Okay, we'll finish there because it's time for prasadam. Talking about.